Welcome back to the Wise Divine Woman podcast. Today I have Dr. Catherine Darley, who is a sleep expert. We all know in menopause, sleep is the first thing to go other than our belly, but it is an important vital piece to the link when you're suffering from hormonal issues. And so welcome to the Wise Divine Woman podcast, Dr. Catherine. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here. I have been in sleep since I was in college. I just kind of got the bug. And so I started right out of college working in a research lab and then doing the overnight sleep studies at a sleep clinic while I was in medical school. And since then, I have been privileged to work with people across the lifespan from 1 to 101. And so many folks, women, in those mid years is when they start having serious sleep complaints that they're reaching out for help. So that's been kind of the bulk of my patient experience is with midlife women, from 40s on up. There's so many complaints of sleeplessness in about a third. Then there's also obstructive sleep apnea, restless legs, which increase, unfortunately, as we get older. And so my mission is really to give people the skills that they need to bolster their sleep. And I think about it really as strengthening your sleep system so that you can withstand some of these hormonal challenges, lifestyle challenges, et cetera.
It's so true. And it's interesting. I was just sitting here thinking, one, it starts when we have children. It is a struggle then just getting them into their sleep cycles, and that just disrupts our aspect. And interesting, in college life or university life, of course, you're always struggling balancing work and life and school at the same time. So it's always this aspect. Do you find more women, as they're entering into that perimenopausal phase, are now ending up with more sleep apnea?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Even though we do think it's a male issue, like I think the male dominant aspect of things, but for women, we don't really hear about it much for sleep apnea.
Yeah, and that's really actually a problem that we've identified in the sleep community is that obstructive sleep apnea in women, particularly midlife and older women, is grossly underdiagnosed and it's missed. And that is a problem because untreated obstructive sleep apnea causes problems with obesity, metabolic syndrome, and diabetes, those concerns with our blood sugar that we have at increasing prevalence as we get older. It also can cause problems with heart health. So yeah, that is a serious problem. What happens is that our changes in our estrogen, actually estrogen helps us keep the tone of our tissues, including the tone of your airway. So your airway without estrogen is just a little looser and easier to obstruct. And then progesterone actually has a role in stimulating our respiratory system. And so both estrogen and progesterone start to decrease as we get into our postmenopausal years.
Wow, I didn't know that. I understand the skin aspect of things, but we don't consider the loose skin on the outside still means the loose skin on the inside, which is a really great concept. And again, with the progesterone and respiratory, no idea. The first thing that came to mind is what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right? The drop in estrogen, weight gain, or is it the lack of sleep causes this vicious cycle? It's so hard to say. In your clinic, how do people approach you, or how do people approach therapies?
Yeah, so I'm a naturopathic physician in the state of Washington, and naturopathic medicine is really about using the least force interventions that will cause an effect. So, for instance, for insomnia, we're going to do behavioral therapies before we reach for medications. And of course, sometimes we need to get to medications or other higher intervention treatments, but if possible, we do those lighter, less likely to have negative side effect treatments first. So you asked earlier for tips, and one thing that I think people have probably heard about, but I think people are not necessarily getting the message of how impactful this is controlling our light and our darkness. Basically, we have this hormone melatonin, which many people have heard about, that is the hormone of darkness and helps us feel drowsy. If there is enough light that we can hold our hand out at arm's length and see our fingers wiggling, that is enough light to suppress our melatonin somewhat. So it's extremely sensitive to light, much more so, I think, than people realize.
Exactly. The whole castor oil phenomena. I bought a night pad for my eyes and using castor oil. But I have found just using, I've never used a
An eye
night
mask.
an eye mask. Yeah, sorry. And wow, big difference. Even the little lights on our phones, or even the little lights on the diffuser, or the light that you can night light in the bathroom. It really permeates the entire area. And I really noticed that. Trying to convince my husband to remove all that stuff is very difficult. So eye mask it is. But that's so
Yes.
true. It is. So as a naturopath, are you working with people's circadian rhythm as well, trying to get them back into this is the time you shut down, this is the time that you should be doing A, B, and C? What does that look like?
Absolutely. So, the recommendation is actually for 3 hours before bed to have very minimal light, equivalent to about 10 candle lights, which is not very much, 10 candle flames. So, I think 3 hours before bed, many of us are still in a really active portion of our day, getting household tasks, computer tasks, kids with homework, whatnot, watching TV. So, a great strategy is to wear blue blocker glasses. I'm sure some people have heard about these, but I just have a few comments. So, here's mine. This is what they look like. And there's many blue blocker products on, for purchase. You want to get ones that have this really strong reddish orange color lens. That's proven to be the most effective. And then wear them for 2 hours before bed. Dim the lights as much as you can in your home, but usually it's difficult to get it to that, 10 candle flames.
Explain the red orange hue. I've never seen that.
Yes. So, what is most impactful in suppressing our melatonin is blue light. Unfortunately, all of our devices are giving off blue light. Even sometimes people think Kindle or other e-readers, those would be fine. They're actually not fine. They do disrupt sleep. So, the reddish lens blocks that blue light.
Well, we'll have to put a link in the show notes for that. I have blue blockers, but it is a clear frame with just the, I guess, the film on the top. I'm not sure. I do a lot of computer work anyways, and I already have the start of some eye issues, so that's always been a priority to me. But the red, very interesting. You always see yellow light, yellow, but I'm guessing
Right.
that's for a
Yeah,
different.
those are good for during the day to protect your eyes from the blue light in the on the screen. But for that nighttime, think about how for most of human history, people have been in sunset colors, firelight, candlelight, or darkness for those hours before bed. And we want to replicate that as much as we can for our natural melatonin to surge.
Excellent. Tell us a few tips of what food is so damaging to your sleep patterns.
Well, the biggies are caffeine and alcohol. And one of the things that people may not know is that as we age, our liver and kidneys are less able to clear those compounds that disrupt our sleep. So, when you're in your 30s or 20s, you may have been able to have a girl's night out with some alcohol or have a lot of coffee in the morning and no problem on your sleep. And as we get into our 40s and 50s and beyond, that small amount or even a small amount can impact our sleep. So, many people like to use alcohol as a nightcap, and it can help us fall asleep initially. But what happens is once that alcohol is metabolized off, we wake up. And that's based on some physiology that the alcohol changes in our bodies. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. Thank you so much, Catherine. So, what are some great nutritional points that you could suggest to people? Not the full meal plan, but what are some great things that people should be incorporating in their evening meals or even before bedtime?
Yes. So, timing is important. The later you eat, it'll push you to be more of a night owl, making it difficult to fall asleep early and making it so that you want to sleep in later in the morning. So the first thing is not to have food or alcohol within 3 hours of bedtime. That said, you want to have enough protein with your dinner that your blood sugar stays steady over the night, particularly as we have more difficulties with blood sugar control as we get older. So that is, whether you're vegetarian or vegan or omnivore, you still want to have whatever protein you prefer. Make sure you have some with your dinner. And then that Mediterranean diet, we hear about the Mediterranean diet for so many issues, and actually, Mediterranean diet seems to help sleep too. I think it's the high level of antioxidants and anti-inflammatory compounds in those wonderful vegetables and olive oil and all that.
So true. It's a very versatile nutrition plan, and it's very adaptable and easy, not expensive, easy to grow in your garden. And it is just one of those great non-complicated nutritional focus for people at almost at any age, especially when you're talking sleep and brain health and brain fog and weight and such like that. I love it. Let's swing back or circle back to sleep apnea. What are some signs and symptoms for women that don't know they have it? Or what are they watching for?
Yeah, so fatigue and sleepiness during the day. One thing that is scary that we hear about regularly in sleep clinics is people will come in saying, I'm here because I've been falling asleep at stop signs. So if you are falling asleep unintentionally during the day, that is absolutely something that you want to watch out for. If you are waking up in the morning with a sore throat or a dry mouth or a headache, or you're feeling like you just can't concentrate in the morning, but then it gets better as you go through your day, that could be a sign of sleep apnea. And if somebody feels like they have to have a glass of water at the side of their bed and sip on water in the night, that is a problem, and you should check and see if you have obstructive sleep apnea. What's basically happening is as the airway closes and repeatedly the sides of the airway get kind of chapped and the water soothes that. So that is not like a normal activity that people should need to do. And then the other thing is high blood pressure for no discernible reason. Or truncal obesity. Yeah, those are all some signs. The mechanisms of obstructive sleep apnea really promote metabolic syndrome, truncal obesity, those kinds of concerns.
Amazing, amazing. Do you find that people who sleep with their mouth open are again more, are they sleep apnea or is that just a sign and symptom of it?
They're more likely to have obstructive sleep apnea. Basically, when we open our mouth, our airway gets narrowed. You do want to breathe through your nose if possible, during sleep.
Tell me your thoughts on tape mouth, taping the
Mouth.
mouth.
Yeah, taping the mouth. I think that it can help. There's really not any great research on it, or not hardly any research. And the problem is you don't want to tape your mouth if you can't breathe through your nose. So, a good test is to close your mouth and then take a big breath in and see if these little valves, it's called the nasal valve right here, are collapsing. If they're collapsing, that's a sign that you're not able to breathe really sufficiently through your nose.
Interesting, interesting. Yeah, you see that on some of the sort of biohacker websites, mouth taping. It's kind of, I'm sure I would feel very claustrophobic. So I think it's very fascinating. So where can people find you, Catherine?
So I'm on my website is skilledsleeper.com, and I have a sleep course that is specifically designed for women through the lifespan, and it talks about sleep disorders and sleep habits and whatnot to establish at different life stages, beginning in puberty and with menses, during sleep challenges during pregnancy, menopause, old age, and that can be a great resource for people. And then I'm on all kinds of social media as Skilled Sleeper, Instagram, YouTube,
I
Substack.
love it. I love it. What in that course, what got you to that course? You just realized there's different stages for women that have challenges anyways.
Yes, and in my practice with patient care, I'm dealing with sleep disorders, but there's many sleep practices that we can use on our own in the absence of a sleep disorder to really strengthen our sleep system. We're dealing with some insults or to our sleep, the light, the abnormal light at night and during the day too. We're not getting enough light, the racing mind, those types of things that we can learn, and I think of them as sleep skills. And my mission with my career is to uplift the sleep of America. That is very difficult when you are only seeing people one at a time. And so that's why I wanted to go bigger with some courses and being out there with more information.
It's so true, right? That's your passion, that's your purpose. It's you've started right from the get-go with this because you saw it, and exactly, you have to have that course and ability and the podcasting and things like that that can really reach the people that need it the most. What are some other sleep diseases?
Oh my goodness. So I'm so glad you asked this, Dana, because there are 58 sleep disorders.
Oh my gosh, I would have never known, never known.
I know. Well, that's the answer that pretty much everybody is like, well, I thought there was 10. I mean, even when I'm teaching healthcare providers and medical students, often, they say 20, 30. But if a person is doing all the practices, follow my Instagram, do the practices, other sleep professionals out there, and you're doing the stuff really sincerely for 3 weeks a month, and you're just not feeling more energetic, you're not feeling like your sleep is more solid, that is the time to go to a sleep clinic or a sleep professional and get evaluated. That is important because there are 58 sleep disorders, and you might have one of them, and you're not going to know until you have that conversation.
And yes, that's so true, right? That it sleep is so vitally important. Understanding signs and symptoms, understanding easy steps to assist and aid in your sleep habits. And wow, 58. I would have never guessed that ever. I didn't even think of 10, to be honest. So it's complicated. And without sleep, your life does seem to spiral, which is unfortunate. And we
Yes,
all know it's
totally.
very important, but it's also difficult to one decide food and or is it the bed or is it the pillow or all those type of things. I myself struggle with pillows, so yeah.
Right.
Is
Yeah,
there a
and your
type, is
body
there a certain
position.
type of pillow that's needed for sleep apnea?
The most important part is not to have your neck cranked too far forward, because that compresses the airway. A good position can be side sleeping, and you want to have a pillow. Let me see if I get on the view that is the height of the distance between your ear and the side of your shoulder, so that you're not bending your neck either way. And then having a pillow between the knees is a good practice to keep your spine in neutral alignment. That's what you want, is your spine to be in neutral alignment as best you can during sleep. So that is very helpful. And, you know, can I circle back around to the 58 sleep disorders? You mentioned what other ones women need to be aware of. And the one I'd like to mention is called restless leg syndrome. You've probably heard of that. What happens is in the evening, people will feel like they just have to move their legs. Sometimes it can be a sensory feeling, like ants are walking on your skin or something, and it's relieved by movement. It's worse if you're sitting. And sometimes it can cause people to have difficulty falling asleep because their legs just feel so restless. But it is associated with a person's iron status. And as we know, women often, you know, with their menses can have challenges maintaining their iron with pregnancy, as we're building all that extra blood volume. Maintaining our iron can be a problem. So this is more of an issue in women. And it's over 50% of postmenopausal women who have restless leg syndrome. So as a PSA, anyone who's listening, and if you are feeling like, oh, I just have to move my legs, and sometimes you're in bed and your legs are moving and you just can't fall asleep because of that, do talk with your primary care physician about that. And they'll probably first line, you know, assess your iron status. Don't take iron, you know, without being advised by a medical professional. You know, it's not something to do on your own, but do, you know, if you're having those symptoms, follow up, because that is most common in older women.
I didn't know about iron. I always associated it as being with a mineral deficiency. Well, iron is a mineral, but I mean a mineral deficiency in the aspect of the magnesium, potassium levels, things like that. My husband is riddled with restless leg and Charlie horses, and I just keep saying, have a banana, have some magnesium. I never would have thought of iron, so I'll have to make sure he gets more protein. So, sure. Excellent. Those are very fascinating. I love that you've really given us lots of little bits of insight into the fascinating world of sleep and sleep disorders. I love that you have really found your passion in this, and this is your go-to, really helping women around the world, helping women in the United States. And I thank you so much. In your meeting with women, what is one word of wisdom, or what is a word of wisdom that you share often?
Well, there is actually a connection between loneliness and sleep. And I really encourage, you know, naturopathic medicine is a holistic form of medicine. So I'm not only talking about the sleep disorders and the nutrients and what not to use for that, but really holistically improving their sleep. And so I encourage women to find, you know, a couple pals, right? And I, now that I'm in my 50s, I'm realizing that people, sometimes there's a season to people. You know, the girlfriends who fit me in college don't necessarily fit me now. And the women that I was friends with when our kids were real little, that not all of them are maintaining the friendship. And I think that's fine. I'm finding people who, you know, I connect with now and suit my interests and have similar interests and whatnot as we grow and develop as people. And so, you know, if you're at a life stage, a transition or whatnot, where some of the old friends aren't coming with you into this new phase, I would really encourage people to take the energy or spend the energy and the time to think about, okay, where am I going to find people who are aligned with who I am now and connect with those people? Because we want to have that sense of community, that sense of joy that comes with community, and that will actually translate into better sleep.
That's such a good point. And it is a hard transition. And I love that. It's a hard transition during life, anyways, with friends. But it is so vitally important to find your people, to find your sisterhood, your soulmates, even in the later part of life, because it can become difficult with loss or children leaving and or the difficulties that that are faced for us. But it is great. I do have a great little sisterhood, did many different groups of people, which is so wonderful. Catherine, I thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. Thank you again. All the information for Dr. Catherine will be in the show notes, where to get the glasses, where to find her courses that she has for the different stages of life, and how you can connect with her one-on-one. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, everyone. Sleep well.
Thank you.